thank you. So today I wanted to use this as an opportunity to share with you some of the work that I've been doing over the past year on my work exploring species relationships in Agrostis. And so, as you know, Agrostis stolonifera, or creeping bent grass, is one of the most important cool season turf grass species to our industry. There's approximately 5 species that are commonly used as turf. And there are estimates that there are between 150 and 200 species of Agrostis worldwide. More recently, just within the past 10 years or so, interspecific hybridization has been not only proposed as a method for improving cultivated Agrostis, but there's also been some work to demonstrate that it is a tool that could be used to improve cultivated Agrostis species. And in order to use it as a successful tool, we need an understanding of species relationships and diversity and some of these types of things. And that's the basis for this research. And so if you think about the entire pool of genetic diversity in Agrostis, it contains both desirable and undesirable traits. And if you think about just a very generalized breeding strategy, recurrent selection, for example, is commonly used, and whereby, you know, we'll constantly select for turf quality traits, biotic and abiotic stress resistance, and we begin to move away from some of the undesirable characters, you can imagine that in that type of strategy, it becomes impossible to select for every type of characteristic that we would find important. And so because of that, some things have been lost over the years of breeding. And if you also look at this big pool of 150 to 200 species of Agrostis, you can imagine that there are traits in species that we've never looked at or thought about looking at that may be of benefit to a turf breeder. And just keep in mind that this particular strategy of recurrent selection has been very successful for our industry. So if you look at some of the modern cultivars, the elite cultivars, shoot density and quality, color, some of these things that we find really important, are dramatically improved over those just used 10, 15, 20 years ago. And so some of the main objectives of this particular line of research are, I wanted to investigate if there are unique sources of Agrostis germplasm. I wanted to study how much genetic diversity is captured by publicly available germplasm, and is there any publicly available germplasm that may be interesting to turf breeders? So one of the first things to consider when looking at interspecific hybridization as a tool to improve species in Agrostis is that Agrostis represents a ploidy series. And ploidy refers to the number of chromosome sets within a cell. Agrostis, the cultivated varieties are either diploid or tetraploid, but it basically spans a wide range of ploidy levels. And ploidy can lead to things like species delimitation, and it can also cause breeding barriers. For example, if you try to cross a diploid and a tetraploid, that'll often result in a sterile progeny, and so that can be a problem. One of the common ways or best practices to determine ploidy is through chromosome counts, and here's some of my more awful chromosome count pictures. But you can see that basically there's 14, 28, and 42 chromosomes in those pictures that correspond with the different ploidy groups. A better, more efficient approach is using flow cytometry. And flow cytometry is a method where you actually measure the amount of DNA in individual cells. And then you can imagine then that there's a correlation between the amount of DNA in a cell and its ploidy level. And so here's an example of that. So there's 4 primary peaks. The peak on the left is an internal control, a chicken red blood cell control, for which I know the genome size. And then the next 3 peaks, in order, are a diploid Agrostis sample, tetraploid Agrostis sample, and a hexaploid. And you can see that those 3 peaks are clearly differentiated from one another, and so it's easy to use this as a tool to characterize unknown samples by ploidy. And so I was working with a set of Agrostis from the National Plant Germplasm System, And I was looking at 305 accessions, and I used flow cytometry at first to measure the DNA content of those. And we were interested primarily in identifying other diploid or tetraploid accessions, because those are the ploidy levels that are important to our industry. So, for example, velvet bent grass, creeping colonial bent grasses are either diploid or tetraploids. Through this work, I was able to identify 15 candidate diploids and 52 tetraploids. And so these are interesting because these have potential to be able to be crossed with some of the existing cultivated material for improvement purposes. My background's in molecular biology, and so I wanted to do a diversity study based on genetic markers. Last year, I presented some data on mite display genetic markers as a tool, and over the past year, I've been improving that technique, and I generate molecular markers for a diversity study in Agrostis. But mite display-based markers are essentially a modified AFLP technique. They're based on miniature inverter repeat transposable elements, and mites are highly prevalent in the grasses. We're interested in them because they're present in high copy number, as I just mentioned, mites are. Some types are gene-associated, which we also find interesting for mite-based markers. And there's some recent evidence that suggests that they're involved in signaling pathway regulation. So I searched a large set of sequence data, identified 495 candidate mites. I demonstrated that 79 of those had evidence of transposition, and so those were, in fact, mites. And from that, I then generated 1,309 mite-based markers to do a diversity study. And I looked at 3 to 5 reps of 81 accessions. Most of those were Agrostis. There were a handful of polypogon and aparix species that I used as outgroups in the study. So from that data of 1,300 markers, I built a similarity matrix in NTSIS and built a cluster analysis. I obviously don't expect any of you to be able to read any of those names, but basically along the bottom you have a list of the accessions that I used in the analysis, and there's 81 there. And so the next few slides are really just geared to highlight a few parts of this analysis. So here, this big block represents the cultivated species. The three subgroups on the left are the Agrostis stolonifera accessions, in the middle are the Agrostis capillaris accessions, and on the right are primarily the velvet bent grass accessions. So if we just take a blow-up of the creeping bent grass cultivars or accessions, one of the things that we find interesting from this is if you look at, if you look at the data here, there's sort of this laddering going on. And the shorter distance, if you look at the distance from one cultivar to another following the branch lengths, that suggests a higher similarity. The shorter branch length suggests that those accessions are more similar. And so there's the potential of a narrowing of genetic diversity in some of the more modern cultivars. And so we found that to be somewhat interesting. Another thing interesting from this analysis, if we look at some of the accessions that are outside of this cultivated block. On the right are the polypogon accessions, and on the left are some of the more distantly related Agrostis species that are understudied. The polypogon accessions are interesting because they're fairly closely related to some of these cultivated accessions, and some of these more distantly related Agrostis species are also worth investigating. If we look at this in relation to the ploidy analysis data, there are two main groups of diploid accessions, the velvet bent grass accessions, which we already know to be diploid. And then there is also this group of Mongolian accessions. They are collected from the Mongolian region of diploids. And so that's interesting because it's a potential source to identify novel diploid germplasm. And so just to conclude, from my work, it was clear that mite display was an effective tool to be used in a diversity study. For some of the reasons that I just went through, based on the clustering of mite display markers, there were some interesting groups. So for example, some of the understudied species, the relationships with polypogon species, and also the placement of diploid and tetraploid unknown accessions in relation to the cultivated germplasm. And some of this data certainly suggests that there's potentially a narrowing of the germplasm, particularly in some of the cultivated accessions. And so some of the future studies from this are to characterize some of the unknown germplasm for important turf traits, examine the crossability, because obviously in order for interspecific hybridization to be a valuable tool, you have to be able to generate a hybrid between the different species. And because of my interest in molecular biology and mites, I'm interested in characterizing some of the mites and exploring some of their recent research that implicates mites as being involved in gene pathway regulation. And so I'm interested in exploring some of those types of relationships. And obviously that there's a Mongolian region of candidate diploid germplasm. It'd be interesting to collect as much of that material as possible. So talking fast, so there's just a few groups and people that I'd like to thank. The National Plant Germplasm System for providing the bulk of the germplasm that I was working with, the National Turfgrass Evaluation Program for providing a lot of the modern cultivars that I worked with, the U.S. Golf Association and the U.S. Department of Agriculture for portions of the funding of this research, and I'd like to thank Scott Warnke, Faith Bellinger, Dave Rotter, and Gary Bashan for helping me with some of the technical aspects of this project. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Yeah?
What pointing level was Polypogon at?
I didn't measure those.
Because I was recently at a dissertation where they had air-specific crosses that they could document between Polypogon and Pogonosis stolonithra.
So part of the reason that I included Polypogon is if you go back in the literature, there's evidence of intergeneric hybrids forming between Polypogon species and Agrostis. And so that's why I included that. And then I also included Apara species because in some other, I think chloroplast sequence phylogenies, Apara was just kind of outside of that. And so I felt that it was a good outgroup to include.
And some of those other Agrostis species, were some of the Native American Agrostis, or were they mostly from other countries? Because NPGS sometimes doesn't have the natives.
Yeah, so I would say the bulk of the material I worked with was not native to the U.S.
Time for one more quick question. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.